Back to My Garden, episode 79.
Welcome to Back to My Garden. Discover your passion for gardening. Here's Dave Ledoux.
Attention garden lovers. Do you want to save time, save money, and have your most amazing garden ever? Receive free tips, strategies, and gardening techniques from passionate gardeners around the world. Join the VIP club for free today at www.backtomygarden.com/VIP. What's the hottest trend in gardening? I think the hottest trend is aquaponics. Can you really grow a massive garden powered by fish? Find out more and discover the secrets to building fish-powered gardens at www.backtomygarden.com/fish.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world when you listen to this. I'm Dave Ledoux, and welcome to another episode of Back to My Garden. Tremendous guest for us today, folks, all the way to the west coast of America. Nicole's gardening life near San Francisco is fueled with passion, fascination, and beauty. Exploring color, texture, fragrance, sound, and space outdoors is her delicious obsession. Nicole is a brilliant garden blogger and has a tremendous weekly garden inspiration newsletter where she shares gardening tips as diverse as Epsom salts all the way to roof rats. We have a ton to chat about in the garden today. Please welcome the show from San Francisco, Nicole Martins. Hi, Nicole.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
It's bright and early where you are, midday here. I'm glad you're here.
Thanks so much. Yeah, no, I'm very happy to be here.
I gave you a brief introduction, and I want to get to know you better, and our listeners want to hear your stories as well. Nicole, relax, take a deep breath, take a minute or two, and just share with us a little bit about your background and how did you get into gardening?
Well, interestingly, I got into gardening in terms of for business reasons. I was in sales, and I wasn't very happy with it, where it was going, the commission structure, all the stress of it. And a close friend of mine from college, who happens to live in Washington, D.C., had gone and done a program in garden design at George Washington University. And he was planning on moving out to the West Coast. So I got myself in gear and noticed that there was a docent training program at the local arboretum. It was called Stribing Arboretum, and now it's called San Francisco Botanical Gardens. It is amazing. Love it. It's still my go-to place. But I went ahead and signed up for the docent program and really just opened up my entire life to plants, visually looking at them, seeing how they're used in the landscape, designing with them, all this kind of stuff. Really just the first time I ever started seeing things sort of on three dimension. And I loved it. But I was expecting him to move out here, and I kept thinking, you know, how can I take some of this and turn it into a business? You know, how are we going to work together? Like, he'll have certain strengths, I'll have certain strengths. And that was just food for thought as I was moving along. And of course, I loved it so much. So next step was I went and I did a program for 2 years in Oakland and became certified horticulturist and apprenticed and did all sorts of different things with other landscaping companies. And I apprenticed at the Botanical Gardens, which was a really, really good experience. I highly recommend that to anybody starting out. If you can go to your local, you know, botanical gardens or anything that's sort of happening in that way, see how you can volunteer or get involved. You learn so much, and you meet so many great people, and it kind of can go from there. So all that kind of came together, and end of story is that my friend never did move out to the West Coast, still lives in D.C., has a thriving landscaping business there. He's a really talented designer. But it left me with this, oh, my God, I've got this additional education. I saw this sort of this partnership happening. I thought, you know, wouldn't this be great? It'll be nice to have two people take the pressure off of just me coming out there sort of as an entrepreneur. And I just had to kind of deal with it. And I thought, well, you know what? I didn't like in sales sort of the structure of commission-based lifestyle. It sort of was too stressful for me. And so I knew that in the landscaping field, I just wanted to make sure I had both the ability to be creative with designing and all of that kind of stuff, but I also wanted stable structure. So I had heard through some friends of mine that, you know, having a gardening business is a really great way to make a living. Like, it's, you don't have, you know, you could, a women, it's a great business. And it just stuck with me. That was another thing. It just stuck with me. It was like, I can have a really nice lifestyle, you know, and, but I wanted to develop a clientele. I wanted to have consistent, regular, monthly work so that I can, could feel comfortable that, you know, should something go awry, I had a base of income. And that was the approach I took. And I still am kind of working off of that now. I have amazing gardens, have designed many gardens, continually do that. And, you know, I'm a plant geek at this point. I mean, that's kind of where it's at. I live in San Francisco, have a very small rental apartment, not a place that I grow a lot of houseplants or do too much outdoors. And also my lifestyle is one where I'm the type of person I like to get around. So I'm not the person who could ever have a garden nursery or anything like that, because I'm too mobile and I like to kind of be spontaneous and do things. So I always have to have that kind of first and foremost with the sort of the life I lead. And I do have a garden. I have a cabin up in Northern California, about 2 hours outside of the city. So I have that. That is my personal garden. It's wonderful. And I can share that with you if you'd like. But that's kind of, I hope, in a nutshell, explained sort of, it was challenging. I didn't expect this. I really, when I started out, I was just so nervous, you know, starting a business by myself and all that. And those were sort of the ways that I wrapped my head around it. And I couldn't be happier that I kind of got into horticulture.
Fantastic, Nicole. Great job. That's a good intro.
Thank you.
You know, for those of you driving in your car, Nicole and I are going to sit back and talk about gardening for half an hour. Don't try to take notes. Be safe. I'm going to take down all the notes and lists and resources that Nicole shares. I'm going to have them up on the blog at backtomygarden.com. Make sure you follow Nicole on Twitter. She's at Passionate Gardener, but gardener has no vowels, so it's PassionateGardner. San Francisco, that's Twitter country, isn't it?
It's Twitter country, my goodness. Really is.
They need longer handles so you can have the whole thing. And your blog
is
awesome.
Facebook it is.
Well, Facebook, yeah.
Right.
Everybody go to Nicole's blog at the end of the show at www.passionategardenersplural.com. Because you have so many great tips there. How long have you been garden blogging?
Garden blogging for about a year now.
Meeting
and,
some cool people.
It's a lot of fun. It's just a lot of fun. In addition, you know, it's a way to really share what's happening. And I think from the perspective of blogging, to me in a way, it makes me even more attentive. So I really like that. Because I'm sharing, I have to think about things a little bit differently, and you must feel the same way. Or, you know, it's just that sort of noticing even more. It's heightened, I'm really, really enjoying it. It's, you know, growing slowly but surely, and getting as creative as we can, and have nice things planned for the future. So, it's a lot of fun.
We have a lot of listeners, Nicole, that live in big cities and have little patio gardens.
Mm,
like 30 countries or something. It's amazing. And
oh, my goodness.
Oh, I know. Wow. I mean, if you're listening to this right now, thank you. Because, I was always amazed when we had our third listener, and now we're global. And you said something about your cabin.
Yes.
For my city dwellers out there grinding through rush hour traffic, Nicole, can you just paint a word picture of what the cabin is like, what it means to you, and what do you like to grow up there?
Well, it's a different zone. San Francisco's USDA zone, that's the hardiness zone, is 10. Up there, it's colder. It's a zone 8. So there are many challenges up there. Number one, I'm not there more than, you know, maybe a week, a month. So things have to be able to be sustainable. They have to kind of thrive on their own. They need to be sort of easy care. And deer will just go to town up there. And so many people deal with that. That's not something we deal with in the city at all. So it's really just kind of, and the summers get really hot. And there's, you know, so I do have irrigation, an irrigation system. What's growing really are a lot of herbal plants, Buddleias, lavenders, santalinas or lavender cotton. A lot of ornamental grasses, a plant that's, I'm not sure what its hardiness is, it's called Carpenteria. It's a wonderful shrub, Nifafia, otherwise known as the, lily torch or hot poker plant, common name potentially. A lot of clematis vines. Clematis vines seem to be really, really thriving in that climate, and the deer don't nibble too much. So I'm really happy with that. And I find that, I call it a cabin. It's kind of a cabin / house. It's really actually quite sweet. It's got big windows up high and high vaulted ceilings. So it's really kind of charming. I can also call it a cabin because it's up in like 2,700 foot elevation it's in a forest. The ponderosa pines are there, the sugar pines, dogwoods grow there natively, manzanitas, otherwise known as Arctostaphylus, grew up there natively. So it's quite pretty up there, and the cabin, as I say, it's a cabin, but it's quite cute. But the outside of it, I think, is a little on the ugly side. I always have thought it was it's cute ugly, if that makes sense. I'd have to show you a picture. Maybe I'll put it up on my blog. It's funny, and I wanted to screen it quite a bit with clematis vines. I could go for something that I thought would really give me some kind of coverage. Of course, they're deciduous. I do have clematis Montana Rubens. That is sort of semi-deciduous, but it loses all its leaves. It goes dormant. It loses its leaves. Really, the only evergreen clematis vine is Clematis Armandii, and I'm not growing that. So the clematises are kind of grown in containers, and they're right on the foundation of the house to kind of screen, make it look cuter. In the summer, it's so much fun because I do have a lot of friends up and family members up, and coming from a tiny little apartment to be able to go up there, drive through wine country to get there, driving through Sonoma, Napa Valley, because it's in that route, so it's really pretty. I've made an outdoor patio with flagstone, and the other part of it is actually a really nice little gravel. So I've got my teak patio furniture. I've got, lounge chairs that I leave outside all winter long because they're made of teak. So I don't have any issues in the summertime. I put out my really bright orange cushions, and when I come and go, I kind of put that out, and I put it back in my house when I leave, and I've got my clematis is blooming and all my lavenders, and what else is growing up there? I've got berberis and a lot of salvia uliginosa. It's really neat. That's kind of a blue-flowered sage. Salvia greggii, some other sages. Again, the deer are kind of timid when it comes to the sort of fragranty, herbally plant. So I kind of planted naturalistically when I started it, and I made paths throughout my place. I did it very kind of low budget, but very kind of organically and naturally, playing with what I had there. I used to create sort of garden beds and, kind of punctuate them or delineate them. I used manzanita, which is Arctostaphylus / manzanita is the common name. And that is something worth looking up because it's just so, the bark of the plant is just gorgeous. It's like this beautiful red peely type thing. And I use that kind of cut up long pieces to sort of delineate and edge these naturalized beds. And I think it's sweet. It has a nice, really nice feel. And so when you come from like the city to go up there on circuit, very windy roads, get up to this 2,700 foot elevation in the Mayacama Mountains, sort of just northeast of Calistoga, California, it's like you're kind of in heaven, and you just can take a deep breath. It takes a few minutes, I think, to unwind. Any of your listeners that live in big cities, I just feel like we all get so pumped up. We're around so many people, and, to sort of unwind just definitely takes a while. But I feel like I'm with nature. It's very naturalized, and it just feels like a sanctuary, really, is what it feels like. Mm-hmm. Love it.
Nicole, that's awesome. You got your own idyllic slice of paradise. Then the other 5 days of the week, you're around client gardens.
That's right. That's right.
Now, almost accidentally now, you're an entrepreneur and you've chosen professional horticulture as a career path. We have a lot of parents that listen to this.
Okay.
Can you talk a little bit about specifically this year just finished, when you're working with your clients, what were some of the surprises, frustrations, and pleasurable moments that you had working in other people's gardens?
Wow, that is a great question. Pausing to think for a second. You know, recently I have a client who is a little bit further. They're in Berkeley, California, so I kind of pushed a little bit of work away from the situation. I didn't really want to take it on. They had a landscape architect do a beautiful job, but they were not happy with the planting choices that were coming out from this particular designer. And they, you know, asked me what I thought and would I be able to kind of work with them. And I thought, wow, you know, when people get complaining and aren't happy, you know, you always have to kind of think, okay, what is going on here? And sort of psychoanalyze it a little bit, look into like, what's the psychology? Why are these people unhappy? And, you know, would I make them unhappy too? Because we're all fallible. We all are trying to understand things. But I think that, you know, as great a job as this designer did, one of the things that, you know, they needed for this planting plan to feel very airy and transparent. And the approach that was being taken was a little more heavy, a lot of shrubs and trees, just very heavy. And they are extremely, you know, as I found, very sensitive to space, very sensitive to things, you know, movement and things feeling dark. Their house is light. I mean, the color paint there is just whites, you know, different shades of light colors, and there's tons, the windows are big. So basically I found that, you know, I was concerned because you don't want to disappoint, you don't want to let down somebody, and you're trying, in a business setting, you're still trying to figure out what is this that my clients seem to want. I figured it out. I think they're happy. It was a more naturalized planting approach and, you know, using a lot of ornamental grasses and perennials with vertical accent-y type things that you can sort of see through, like, for example, Verbena bonariensis, scabiosas, verbascums. So these kinds of plants that have a more narrow footprint. They're not taking up a lot of horizontal space so much. Oh, other ones, for example, that could kind of be considered in this, although they will start to take up more mass, could be echinaceas, black-eyed Susan, otherwise known as rudbeckia, kind of giving it, and they have incredible, like, it's warm and hot and sunny back there, so I could really push into a lot of flowers and mix sort of all this habitat together. But that effect is much more airy, and they have, you know, it resulted in, I think, breaking down this feeling of mass, which for some reason was very a sensitive topic to them. And this kind of thing happens all the time in a business sense. People have one client only likes primary colors and really thinks that everyone likes exactly what they like. Oh, everyone must always like only primary colors, which is like your red, your, you know, what are they, red, blue, green, I mean, just the, like, some, and then someone else doesn't like ornamental grasses. It reminds them of, like, more lawn. And so you always have really just, I mean, from the simple differences that human beings have subjectively to, of course, you know, going further and wanting specifics. Like, I have a client who's a pretty well-known chef here locally, and, you know, right now, her design was kind of sort of a little more initially sort of a French Provençal type garden. So it has a lot of, you know, herbal plants, a lot of sort of a really nice, I'm trying to think of some of what's in there. I've got, striking me, I'm all of a sudden trying to think of one of the really good lemon verbena. Yes. Lemon verbena, Meyer lemons, Kaffir limes, but really it's more ornamental. So it's a lot of, like, you know, climbing roses. And these are small gardens. We're back in San Francisco, so it's not, you know, it's lovely. You could just have a simple pot with a beautiful plant. But this design was designed for her for entertaining. And this year, The new thing is to go ahead and create more edibles in the garden. So I'm not sure, I haven't met yet, so I'm not sure what we're going to do, whether it's working in an area that already exists, because space is not infinite, whether we go vertical, whether we work and take out some of the, you know, ornamentals, because some of the area where the sun is the strongest and the reflective light is the strongest, where some of these edibles would grow, we have to figure that out, or go ahead and even purchase sort of a already made raised vegetable bed type thing. And so I'm just not sure where we're headed with that. So there's always surprises. Everybody is different. It keeps you busy. It keeps you on your toes. And I think just like any business, you know, there's the art of gardening. There's the art of all that. I think sometimes people don't really understand what it takes. I mean, we're dealing with plants. We're dealing with live systems, and plants, you know, go through, hard times just like people do, and they go through times in the season where they're not looking their best, and it's aesthetic issues that people sometimes don't understand. I feel like people are becoming more and more conscious of nature and better practices, and that's a really, really positive thing.
You know, Nicole, I've given up. I have writer's cramp. I've been trying to jot down all of the flowers that you've been sharing and the shrubs. And, you know, I'm going to have my assistant go back and try to do this for me, because I have chicken scratch. Like, I can read my own writing for clematis and hot poker plant and lily torch. And I think I spelled manzanitas wrong, but that's okay.
I'm happy to spell it for you. And plus, these things are so hard to spell.
You are amazing. Just you're a library in your brain. You use words that indicate to me that you're playing the game at a different level than than I am, because you use words like texture, fragrance, vertical. These are spatial harmonic words. Like, they're descriptive in a way that I haven't learned yet. I'm very impressed.
Well, thanks. And I mean, I think that's where it all starts. It starts, you know, whenever you're interested, and you'll definitely get there if you want to get there. You know, I think one of the things about that's so neat about horticulture, gardening and gardens is like everyone has sort of what they're fascinated with or what they love or what speaks to them. And I would say over the years, the main thing that I always get back to is my enthusiasm for plants and understanding kind of the connection, how they grow together, making compositions, kind of learning to understand just through trial and error, really, and also in a business sense. I think the true reality is knowing what does work, because, you know, again, people, you can't, it's, you have to sometimes not be as experimental as you would wish every once in a while to make sure that things do work and that they're solid, and that changes from location to location, microclimate to microclimate, and all your listeners are in different locations. And so looking at what's growing in your neighborhood, looking at what your neighbors have, going to your local gardens, reading really good books and blogs, you can learn so much. You can just going to school for it, you can really just build, and then pretty soon, boom, you're or wherever you were excited to get to, and you just continually learn. You never stop. You never stop.
You know, Nicole, speaking of never stopping, I glanced at the clock and our time is whipping by.
Oh, my goodness.
Now's the time in the show where we play a game called Five Quick Questions.
Okay.
This is your chance to share your wisdom and experience with rookie brand new gardeners. Are you ready to play?
Sure.
Question number one. What's the biggest gardening mistake that you've ever made that you're willing to admit in public?
Planting, probably, it's not, I don't have a specific, but planting something that clearly was not, like planting something that's really aquatic or something that likes moist soils in something that's a dry environment. Something like that, like not doing the due diligence and just playing too much. I'm sorry, I don't have a specific example of that.
No worries. Question number two. What's a skill that you possess when it comes to gardening that is really useful or you're very proud of?
I think I can get the zeitgeist of a space pretty quickly, and I'm pleased that I like to take my time with figuring out a space or what a space desire needs, based on the fact that I think there's a lot of factors that come into design, and some of that includes just inherently understanding the space, getting a feeling for where you are, and just I'm happy that I don't rush some of those things. I think we really need to sort of just take our time.
You just made my point, is garden designers are at a different level than the rest of us, along the lines of writing music or creating art like a painter.
Mm-hmm.
Like you use the word zeitgeist. I mean, that's the million-dollar word of the week, is every space has this energy that you somehow, you look into the future and then make into reality.
That's really, really it. You're hitting it. And, you know, and I think it feels good to be able to connect with that, because I think there is no rush. It is let the place tell you. Give it time. You know, you move into a new house and you think, oh, I know what I can do. I'm just going to do this really quickly. Why? You know, because you know, it let the place tell you. Give some time. See how the lighting goes through the year. And really, at the end of the day, when you get there, you've created something that's more meaningful and more sustainable and makes you happier. And more is more fitting, maybe, to your overall situation, place, all that.
I'm getting off the five quick question tangent just briefly. I wanted to ask you, what do you find personally more challenging and rewarding, small intimate spaces or large open spaces to design?
I like small intimate spaces to design. There's a lot you can do, little vignettes, just getting creative. You don't even need to do too much to just have a chance at design. I mean, you could just take a pot and make a pretty a cool composition, or you could mix ornamental plants with edible plants in a pot. I mean, so I think the small really employs your creativity, and you don't necessarily have to get as overwhelmed. Whereas when you have something big, it can feel more overwhelming, and it's more layered, and it's more encompassing, I think.
Awesome. There's so many parents of young teens that listen to this show, and they're always trying to figure out career paths for their kids. And I've mm-hmm. kind of been evangelizing the last couple of months that professional horticulture is a viable career path.
Definitely. I think it definitely is. And there's so many different ways to go about it. I think, like, having your own business, of course, and then working in a nursery, you know, becoming a landscape architect, basically, and there's, you know, working at arboretums, and I'm trying to think. Also, of course, I think what's happening is edibles and sort of the vegetable gardening, sort of the food gardening is our future. I mean, really, even in small urban areas. So I think having the knowledge, these small farms that are so popular right now, and you know, out in the country, and even in cities like San Francisco, there's, you know, it's a little different, but I think that's emerging. And so having the knowledge about that, and you know, getting educated now, I think it's so incredible. There's so many ways you can take it. And I think just getting your feet wet, you can then learn of the many more opportunities perhaps that you hadn't even thought of that are really out there and emerging.
Nice.
So it's very interesting.
Very good. Question 3. The internet's a big place, great resource for gardeners. If you had one or two of your favorite websites to share, maybe a blog or something, what would they be? What would those sites be?
Okay. Let me think what's really good. I like Gardening Gone Wild. That's a nice blog. Gardening Gone Wild. And I'm trying to think of the guy's name. He's a photographer as well. And I think at this point there may be 3 or 4 people that are involved in this blog. Beautiful, lots of tips, lots of pointers, lots about succulents. And I'm trying to think of another one. Now, of course, that I have to think, it's it's not coming out. I can get you a link for it if you want.
I'll put them up in the show notes, but we'll circle back to that. It'll pop into your head. Probably at 2 a.m. you can text me.
Of course. Or if I jump on my laptop, I could come up with some, but they're not in my head right now. I'm so sorry.
Well, question four is the best way to find about good gardening books is talk to a good gardener. So do you have one or two favorite gardening books that you can recommend?
Well, yeah, there's I just read this really great book, and there's two books. One is by Pete Odolph, and that's PieteOudolph. And I just read it probably within the last month, and it's called Planting a New Perspective. And Pete Odolph is a plant. He's you know, one of the great plantsmen of our time. He's from Holland. His work's the New York City, New York High Line, which is wonderful for anyone to go and visit. It's just so inspirational. So his planting plans are just natural. He gets into sort of sustainability and how to do these plans that encompass like a lot of different species. And it's not as complicated as you'd think. I mean, it is complicated because he's such an artist, but he makes things look easy. And there's somebody else that I got to through reading his book that I'm really getting. My book is on the way. I've read half of it, but it's by a guy out of Wisconsin, and his name is let me see if I have that written down. His name is, sorry about that, Roy Diblick. And I had a chance to kind of skim through half of his book recently at the library, and it's really neat. The book is called Small Perennial Gardens, The No Maintenance Approach, and the no is K-N-O-W. So he's sort of the same as sort of Pete Odolph, and in fact, they're allies, they're friends, and they're kind of all with the perennial movement and how to put perennials together for these naturalized plantings with good habitat, biodiversity, lower maintenance, sort of takes you to the future of where we need to go, leaving the sort of block plantings that, you know, were from sort of the 1900s and 1800s, moving towards more fluid, naturalized plantings, and just think and opening your mind to sort of what's going to be happening. I think even though it might seem like these are sort of books that you'd read later on, I think that they could really be impactful to kind of get started, or at any point to sort of get so stimulated and get really creative about where things can go.
Awesome. And folks, I'll have links up to those books on the show notes. And finally, question five, Nicole, look into your crystal ball. This is fun one, no right or wrong answer.
Okay.
Is there anything that you've never really grown before that you're itching to experiment with next season?
Yeah, I'm itching to do more edibles, and not. I mean, more. I want to learn, understand more of the sort of the harvesting of how do people do sort of the kale and lettuces and all that stuff and keep it perpetuated. So I think I may get my hands in that next spring based on the client I had just mentioned. So it would be new to me, and I look forward to learning more and researching that sort of aspect of it if it does come up. And I guess the way that I'll approach it is I'll look towards some of the people in my area that are doing it successfully and are good at it, and see if I can make some connections and learn a little more, read some books, and kind of get to the next level quickly to be helpful. But I have no idea. I mean, seeds, I don't know anything about. Seeds confuse me. Makes me, you know, I'm like, what? A seed? And I think that makes me laugh because I just don't know if it's even my personality.
If I may be so bold, Baker Creek is in your neck of the woods. Rareseeds.com.
Okay.
They are the epic mothership of heirloom seeds. They have workshops and classes and tutorials and just incredible, generous people up there.
Baker Seeds.
Baker Creek Seeds. www.rareseeds.com.
Okay. I will check that out. God, that's great. I seem to have a block. I definitely think there's a block there.
Slippery slope, Nicole. Slippery slope. It's like you start shopping by country flags Like my wife goes, hey, look, they have a hot pepper from Pakistan. And we
we
lose our minds.
Oh, my God. That is fun. That sounds really exciting. I'm going to check them out. Thank you so much for that.
She bought me a hot pepper with 1.3 million Scoville units.
Are you serious?
And I'm a macho dude. I'm a tough guy. So, oh, yeah, this is no problem. I have no problem.
Oh, my God. Don't tell me those peppers are still producing for you right now at 38 degrees Fahrenheit.
Well, I brought him in. I call him him. He's my little buddy. I brought him in November. He finally finished. It is unbelievable how hot. It makes the ghost pepper look like candy. It's hotter than a ghost pepper.
Is there a way to handle when your mouth gets burnt like that? You can't drink water. You eat bread, right? What are you supposed to do to stop the burn?
The funny thing is you'd imagine your mouth would take the pain, but it's tolerable in the mouth.
Uh-huh.
And then all of a sudden you feel a sweat emerge from every pore in your body simultaneously.
Oh, my God.
It pools in your ear. Your nose starts to run. Your eyes water. And your body temperature goes up. And
Oh, my God.
It's wonderful. You know, it's like this endorphic rush if you can handle it.
Totally. Well, also, you know, you're probably killing off, like, if you have any parasites in your body, you're cleaning that. That's gone.
Yeah.
You've burnt them out.
It takes a special individual to handle them raw off the plant. But for cooking,
it sounds like you were designed for it. It does. It sounds like it's like the fit.
No, I'm kind of in the I did it once and I survived, and now I'll use them for cooking. But
wow!
Yeah. But we never would have gone down into exploring new things if I didn't find my Obi-Wan Kenobi or my Yoda, and Baker Creek is my Yoda.
Right. Okay. Oh,
so have some fun on that site.
I'm going to. I'm looking forward to it. Thanks so much. It's great. It's great advice.
Listeners playing the home game, make sure you follow Nicole on Twitter. Reach out and say hello to her. She's out on the West Coast near San Francisco. She's at Passionate, GRDNR. And share her stuff on her blog. The more you care, the more you share on social media. Her blog is at www.passionategardeners.com. Nicole, you're an awesome guest. We've just blown through that.
I had such a great time. Well, I really enjoyed myself, and thank you so much. Your show is a lot of fun, and of course you make your guests feel so comfortable, which is, I really appreciate it. What a fun time. Thank you for having me talk about one of my favorite things to talk about, which is gardening.
I want to give you the last word to the listeners all over the world who love gardening. Can you leave us with either a pearl of wisdom or a note of encouragement on our gardening adventures?
I think it's, sometimes just focus on the little things, the small details of a plant, a bud emerging, leaves falling off your trees, the way they look, the way they feel. How do you feel? Kind of connect, the feeling of connecting with nature, and you can do it in the smallest and simplest ways. And I think it just kind of is what it's what part of this is all about. And I think it can really draw you in to wanting to learn more.
Brilliant. You've been tremendous, Nicole. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.